This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It's 8:06. I'm Katie Hyde from the Michigan Talk Network, filling in for Steve Gruber all this week, and it is great to have you with us. And with us this morning on the line is U.S. Representative Tim Walberg. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Katie, it's good to be with you, and thanks for sitting in the big chair there.
Oh, yeah, it's been a pleasure, although I'll be relieved when Steve comes back into town, for sure. I'm looking at this news story. I want to read a little bit. I'm going to go to a bite by Paul Ryan, and then I'd like you to respond if we could. The White House and lawmakers of both parties grudgingly embraced a massive government-wide budget deal Wednesday. It combines more than $1 trillion in year-end spending with hundreds of billions of dollars in tax cuts for businesses, families, and special interest groups. Leaders plan to push it to a final passage by weekend and quickly adjourn for the holidays, ending what some are calling a tumultuous year on Capitol Hill. The sprawling package will keep federal agencies funded through September 30th of next year, and that kind of keeps the government from going into shutdown. And here is what Speaker of the House Paul Ryan had to say.
Look, in divided government, no one gets exactly what they want. But this week, we have completed two bipartisan agreements that advance Republican priorities. First, we are lifting the government's 40-year-old ban on crude oil exports. This is a big win for American jobs and for our energy industry. It's a big win for our manufacturers and for our foreign policy. We are increasing military spending. We are tightening security requirements under the nation's visa waiver program. We are permanently reauthorizing the critical health care benefits for our 9/11 first responders in a very fiscally responsible way. We are preventing a taxpayer bailout of Obamacare's Risk Corridors program. We are freezing most IRS operations and stopping the IRS from suppressing civic participation in 501c4 organizations. We are maintaining all of our pro-life protections, including the Hyde Amendments, and we are making cuts to the UNFPA program. In addition to all of that, we are ending Washington's days of extending tax policies 1 year at a time. I have said I inherited this process. Let me be the first to say, I don't think this is the way government should work. This is not how appropriations should work. So we played the cards that we were dealt with as best as we possibly could. And inheriting a process, I know we need to restore to regular order. And I believe we've made the best of it. We listened to our members. We've let our committees take the lead. And I'm pleased that we've been able to accomplish so many things for the American people. And I look forward to, in 2016, just like we have in the last 6 weeks, getting Congress working back on the way it should be working, getting back to what we call regular order. That is what 2016 is going to be about, is steering this battleship toward working the way the People's House was intended to be working in the first place. Look, I have no reason to believe that we're going to have a shutdown. In divided government, you don't get everything you want. This is the result of a bipartisan, bicameral compromise. And I think everybody can point to something that gives them a reason to be in favor of both of these bills.
That's Speaker of the House Paul Ryan reacting to yesterday's budget, and U.S. Representative Tim Walberg's on the line. Thank you for wading through that long soundbite, by the way. It sounds like Paul Ryan has some mixed feelings on that. Are you happy or unhappy with the solution that was reached?
I think I have to say it both ways. I'm happy. I'm happy we've come to a conclusion. As he said, in a really a broken system that's gone on for too long, where we do budgeting by continuing resolutions or by omnibuses that go to the dead end of the period with shutdowns potentially in place. But in the process of negotiations, you don't get all you want, but you hope you get more than, as a majority, you get more than the minority gets. That's how it works. And you also keep your principles. I think that was what was accomplished. I also appreciate the fact that there are a few other things that Paul Ryan didn't mention there that we got. We got an agreement from the Senate that next year on the appropriations bills, six of the 12 that we've already sent to the Senate this year, and they didn't bother to even take up because of Harry Reid filibustering and stopping even debate on the bills, that next year that will not be the case. They will debate the appropriations bills. And Katie, that's important because it does get us back to the priority that the Speaker has, that I have, and the members of the Republican Conference I know have, and I hope there are a number of Democrats that feel the same way, that we ought to be, if we do anything else, we ought to be debating the budget. We ought to be dealing with it appropriately in the individual 12 individual appropriations bills, having regular order where all of us have a chance to put amendments on as we feel necessary, debate those, fight about those, but in the end, move it forward. That's a key point that I think the Speaker should make as well, that was put into the agreement, and that I think will allow us to get back to regular order next year, and the people's interests will be served in a better way.
Well, and hopefully you can take the Democrats' word on that. Now, that follows up with my next question. How do you expect to work with Democrats and President Obama next year? Because obviously President Obama will only serve another year before someone else is elected in there. Democrats have been known to dig their heels in. Republicans, too. So how do you expect everyone to work together next year? What are we looking at?
Well, it's going to be a challenge. Political years are significantly rough. However, you have to negotiate deals, and then you have to trust people, verify, but nonetheless still trust people to honor their word and their commitment. The Democrats received some things that they wanted, some priorities that they wanted in this omnibus bill. That's the only way you get things through. If you don't, you just simply shut down government forever. None of us believe that ends up working. It has to open at some point in time. So why not negotiate strongly now, get your priorities, realize you can't get everything, but the majority leads the way, and we did that. If the Democrats have made that commitment, and these are leadership that have made the commitment, these are leadership that understand that their elections stand the test next time around as well, we trust that they will honor that. We're going to expect it. We're going to move forward, and frankly, I think this omnibus, in what it accomplished, far outweighs the things that we didn't get. A number of things that I wanted. I'm sad they're not in there. But I also know I got some things in that I fought for and some of my specific amendments to budget bills, the seven that we looked at and sent over to the Senate, are still in there. And a number of them help Michigan significantly.
Congressman, we're going to keep you on the line through the break. I have about 30 seconds here. And so if I have to cut you off, just hang on and we'll get to it after the break. What are some things that you wanted in there that you didn't get?
Well, I certainly wanted a direct reference to defunding organizations like Planned Parenthood. We have other routes that we've gone around to establish that. We can do further more of that in the future. We do know that law is still in place in this omnibus, the Hyde Amendment, the Hyde Act, that indicates that no federal dollars would go toward abortion. That's huge. Planned Parenthood primarily is an abortion mill. That's where they make all their money.
Congressman, I'm going to ask you to pause for just a minute, and we'll join you after the break. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
18 after the hour. This is Katie Hyde from the Michigan Talk Network filling in on the Steve Gruber Show this week. And before the break, we were talking with U.S. Representative Tim Walberg. Congressman, thank you for holding with us on the line there.
Great to be with you again.
Before the break, we were talking about the government-wide budget deal that was reached yesterday, and you were discussing some of the things that you wanted in the bill. Can you start over and review for us again what you wanted in the bill that didn't make it?
Sure. I mentioned the issue of defunding organizations like Planned Parenthood. That's the name that comes up most readily. But there are any organization that would sell human body parts should not be funded with taxpayers' money. That language didn't get in. We have other bills that has been included in. We'll continue that approach. But the huge numbers of pro-life provisions in the bill, I think, takes care of most of that. Another key issue is that Syrian refugee pause. We passed that in a veto-proof majority just a couple weeks ago. The Senate Democrat leadership has been unwilling to let that come up for a vote. That provision was not in the omnibus. That's a disappointment. However, in negotiations, the agreement was made with the Senate leadership, including Harry Reid, that our bill that we passed in a veto-proof majority, Democrats and Republicans overwhelmingly support it in the House, will be taken up in the Senate for a vote. That's a good thing. And sometimes, Katie, in negotiations, you have to look different directions and try to get accomplished what you want. We want to get that bill to the president's desk. That's the most important thing, whether it's in the omnibus or not. So that, in a sense, was a win. We'd like to have it directly in the bill, the omnibus. It wasn't. So we negotiated agreement with the Senate that they would actually take it up, debate it, and vote on it. And that's a good conclusion. So those are some of the things I look at. But I think still we ought to talk about the multitude of good things that are in the bill. And the bill hasn't passed yet. That comes up for a vote tomorrow. But the opportunity is there for us. For Michigan, there in East Lansing, Michigan State University, the FRIB program, superconductor, super collider that's been going on, that was continued to be funded. Harbor maintenance trust fund targets were met, which includes what goes on in the Great Lakes. Great Lakes Restoration Initiative funding was in there. Resources for the A-10 program, our Warthog, our National Guard sought that and wanted to keep that. That's in there. The Army Corps of Engineers were directed to continue working to stop the Asian carp incursion into our Great Lakes. Those are just a few of the things that impact us in a great way. And then we go on with what Paul Ryan talked about of the visa waiver language that was passed in the House that Candace Miller authored was left in the omnibus bill. That is huge in preventing terrorists from coming into this country. Those are things that we look at and say, yes, there are parts of omnibus we don't like, but a negotiated process, you never get all you want, but you hope, as I said, that the majority wins, getting the majority of their key ingredients in the bill, and we got that. So we'll see what happens as we move forward. We want this government to go on the right way. And next year, we have that opportunity to go back to regular order, have 12 appropriations bills debated in time, and move it forward as the American people expect us.
So it sounds like this is the best version of the bill we could have hoped for. Is that your conclusion?
Well, it's the version we have, and we could have hoped for better. We could have hoped for everything we wanted. That's not going to happen. I think this shows why we need to think very carefully about who we put in the White House next time. At least have someone like Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton, who in the end saw what the people were asking for, saw what the people had given them to work with in the House and the Senate, and ultimately work with them. And both were very successful. Clinton working with a Republican-controlled House and Senate, acquiescing to the will of the people who said, Mr. President, we're not going to give you the full power. We want you to work with the Republican ideals. He did, and so spending was reduced. He became one of the least spending presidents in modern history, even as a liberal Democrat president. Reagan, the other way around, worked with a Democrat House and Senate, Tip O'Neill as the Speaker of the House, and ultimately did a lot of great things for this country. And that's what we haven't had with this president. And we look forward to having a president who will work with what the people give him to work with this next time around, show leadership, and at the very least say, do your will in the House and the Senate, then send me something. I'll decide whether I accept it or veto it. And that's how the Constitution has asked us to work. So I'm hoping that'll be the case, and this is an example. We can't go on the first time in history, 7 straight years so far, going into the 8th year, that we've not had an actual budget passed because the president didn't allow it.
And I'm sure echoing a lot of sentiments of a lot of the listeners out there that feel the same way. Now, my last question, just to wrap up, is Paul Ryan's only been in that chair as Speaker of the House for a couple of months. What's your assessment on the kind of job he's doing?
I think he's doing a great job, and I say that because he's communicating to the people. I think more and more people will understand what we're going through here, what we're attempting to do. That's one thing the former speaker did not do, did not get out and communicate. And though I pleaded with him myself, and I know others did as well, to do that very thing, that leaves people wondering. And leaves people, if they're wondering, they feel helpless. This, at least, they'll know what we're attempting to do. The speaker was left with a bird's nest of problems. As he said, this is not the way he wants it to be, but it has to be done at this point in time the way it was left, and do the best with the process. Next year it has to change. I think this speaker has the support, not only of his caucus, but I think a good number of Democrats, as I talk with them, are appreciating the attitude, the openness, going back to full and regular order that allows them the opportunity to put amendments up, as well as Republicans, and have that debated on the floor, and then see what the will of the Congress is. So, for the most part, these 6-7 weeks that Paul has been in that position, he's had to play with the hand he's been dealt and left, but that changes on January 1st.
U.S. Representative,
a total different ballgame.
Tim Walberg on the line. Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to Katie Hyde from the Michigan Talk Network, filling in on the Steve Gruber Show.
All right, it's the Wango, the Tango.
The Steve Gruber Show, American values with Midwestern common sense.
Come on, boys.
Good morning. It's 8:33. This is Katie Hyde from Michigan Talk Network, filling in for Steve Gruber this week on the Steve Gruber Show. This hour brought to you by Mesa, good health, good business, and great schools. And I'm looking forward to speaking to our next guest, and we're hoping to get Darren Bast on the line here next. Alex, do we have him? If we don't, we are going to shift We have him? Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'm going to introduce our next guest. It's Darren Bast. He writes for a variety of environmental and agricultural issues. From the Daily Signal here, it says the Environmental Protection Agency broke the law when pushing its controversial water rule, according to the Government Accountability Office, as Congress considers whether to include it in the Omnibus Appropriations Bill to block funding for the water rule. It should make this issue a no-brainer. Darren, welcome to the program.
That's great to be here. Thanks.
Can you break all of this down for us? What does this mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick background. The EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers developed this new water rule that tries to regulate almost every type of water imaginable in this country. And in doing so, the EPA was basically, according to the Government Accountability Office, and that's an independent office, government unit, that said that the EPA broke the law in trying to kind of promote their rule. They were engaged in improper lobbying activity and covert propaganda, and they were actually linking to organizations to try to encourage people to oppose any legislation that would hinder the rule. So it wasn't just on the regulatory front. They were at least having some type of an attempt on the legislative front as well. So whether or not it looks like the EPA is going to be able to get away with it because Congress is not doing anything to address it.
And that sounds like a problem, definitely. You say in your article that even before the GAO opinion, Congress had more than enough reason to block this type of funding. What are some of those bullet points that you mentioned? What were some of the reasons that they could have blocked this funding?
Yeah, I mean, it's the rule itself. The rule would attempt to regulate, you know, everything from a man-made ditch to, you know, something that we would all consider to be land, but may hold some water, you know, a few days of the year. So most people just consider it land. For the EPA, it's a water. And the problem is, if they consider something to be a water, it becomes very difficult to use your land the way you want to. You have to get a permit, potentially. And that means you're basically they're restricting your property rights. So it's not surprising that, and that means that a lot of ordinary activities you might normally engage in, like a farmer wants to engage just in ordinary farming activities, may not be able to do so as much as they used to be able to. This has been a big concern with a lot of different groups, from farmers and cities, counties, manufacturers, pretty much anybody you can name. And there's attorneys general and agencies from at least 31 states that are suing the federal government over the rule. And that kind of gives you a sense of the opposition.
Do you know if Michigan is one of those states?
What's that?
Do you know if Michigan is one of those states?
I believe that it is, but I'm not definite, though.
Okay, and we have a lot of farming land represented in Michigan. I know we think of it as an automobile industry state, and of course we are, but a lot of farmers represented. And this, to me, if I'm interpreting it correctly, sounds like a lot of governmental red tape that's making life harder for a lot of people.
Yeah, I do want to point out that it's really... It definitely impacts farmers, but it really impacts pretty much impacts most property owners. I mean, the problem is that the rule is so broad and also so vague that it's not even clear what kind of water on your land may be impacted. So your people are going to be walking on eggshells, not sure whether or not they're going to violate the law. So if you're potentially building a home on your property, yeah, you gotta definitely have to be careful with it. I should also point out that this rule is not good for the environment either, because the Clean Water Act, which is the kind of the major federal statute covering water policy, envisions that the states would play a leading role in regulating the environment. And what's happening is, not surprisingly, the EPA and Corps are doing a major power grab of forcing the states out and not letting them play that role at all.
Well, you mentioned that this is broad and vague, and that certainly sounds like the government to me. I mean, when we look back at Obamacare, I know this is off on a different topic, but they said we have to pass this to read what's in it, and that almost reminds me of this as well.
Yeah, and actually, it in some ways, it might even be worse, because the agency, even after they develop these rules that are supposed to provide clarification, is so subjective that what's going to happen is different regional offices of the EPA may interpret the law differently, or you could have 10 different people looking at a particular body of water, and they may come up with 10 different conclusions. So that's the problem. There's no clarity. There's no objectivity to it, so you don't know whether or not you're meeting the law or not. And what's the big problem is that in developing the rule, the EPA... again, according to the Government Accountability Office, broke the law in doing so, which is, that by itself should be a situation where Congress says, you know what, we're not going to give the EPA any funding to implement this rule. And instead, with this massive spending bill that just came out,
exactly,
Congress didn't do that at all. And that's certainly a disappointment.
Of course, and it's confusing, and it sounds like a free-for-all, and that's not the way that people want to live their lives or do business. For those out there that are getting ready to go to work, drop their kids off at school, and say, well, how does this affect me? How does it affect the individual? Why should I get up in arms and care about this? What advice would you give them?
Well, a couple things is, if it may impact you. There very well may be something on your property. Don't assume that it necessarily means you have to have a very clear-cut stream on your property for it to impact you. It may not be true. Well, it's definitely not true. So there might be something that actually is on your property that could be require you, if you have any impact on that water, to get a permit. So it's potential. Further, if Congress does not withhold funding for this rule and they don't take action on the EPA when they allegedly broke the law, when is Congress ever going to take action? We're always concerned about agencies going overboard. I mean, I can't imagine. Now we've got an agency that's broken the law, allegedly, and nothing's being done. It is basically, we're supposed to have three separate branches of government, with Congress providing oversight over the agencies. Well, guess what? I don't think it's ever been any worse now, where agencies can pretty much do whatever they want. And that does impact all of us.
Right. And that's why you said, 38 states are now joining a lawsuit or something to go after this because they have broken the law?
I mean, there's about 31 states that are suing over the rule itself.
Okay.
And this GAO, the Government Accountability Office, ruling just came out a few days ago. And instead of Congress being like, wait a second, why are we giving funding for implementation of this rule, they continue not to address it. And that came as a bit of a surprise and certainly a disappointment to all of us. If Congress doesn't use the power of the purse to address this particular rule, And the question is, when would they ever use the power of the purse, the spending power, to address a rule?
And you won't
right
get
now,
any...
Right now, agencies across the, you know, in the federal government are celebrating because now they know that Congress is, you know, clearly very weak.
Sure. And Darren,
and
you
do
are...
what they want.
You're not getting any argument from me. Thank you so much, Darren Bass. Thank you for joining us on the program. It's 8:41 on The Steve Gruber Show.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars, don't let them end. Star Wars, if they should fire wars, please let these Star Wars stay. And hey, how about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? And hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask, did he scare you as much as he scared me? Ah! Star Wars! Those near and far wars! My seventh winner up here! Star Wars!
Are you dancing like we are in the studio? There's nothing better than Bill Murray singing about Star Wars. It's a great combination there. And a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, a man named George Lucas made a Star Wars film and made off like a bandit. He made a gazillion dollars. That's the actual figure we have, a gazillion dollars on the Star Wars film, on all the merchandising. That had never been done before. A New Hope came out in 1977. And tonight, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, hits theaters, and people have been buying tickets and lined up for a long, long time. And my question to you is, are you going? Are you going to be out there tonight? Are you going to be at some of these first showings for Star Wars? And some of you may be thinking, oh, I don't care about Star Wars, but you know you do. This is a big cultural phenomenon here. And I'm just wondering, are you going? I am going to hit theaters. I'm not going to hit it tonight. I love my sleep and I need some sleep, but we will make it there as a family sometime this weekend. And I'm curious, if you are going, are you going to be decked out like Darth Vader or Princess Leia? Are you going to be bringing your lightsabers? Because if you go, you can't just wear jeans and a sweatshirt. I mean, you have to go all out if you're going to Star Wars. Now, I have to admit, you guys, just don't do the math. Don't carry the one on this. But my husband, I love him, but he remembers my birthday only because I was born in the same year that A New Hope came out. That has saved him many times throughout our marriage. Star Wars has saved our marriage. But we are headed to the film this weekend. And I also remember, 10 years ago when Revenge of the Sith came out and everybody was anticipating this. And it's the one where Anakin Skywalker turns to the dark side. And now I'm showing my nerdy side here in the studio. So this is the moment that people have been waiting for. Am I right? Anakin Skywalker, how he turns to Darth Vader, how all of this goes down, right? So this is the film. And I happened to be at the midnight showing of that one because I didn't have kids yet and I was footloose and fancy free and I can do whatever I want. But so we're at the midnight showing. Everybody there is decked out like a Chewbacca or a Jedi or something like that. It was a lot of fun. We were feeling a lot of energy. And I was sitting next to my husband and his friend. And then this guy I didn't know was on the other side of me. And he was hooping it up like you wouldn't believe. And so I thought, hey, we'll get into this. 2 hours and 15 minutes into that film where Anakin is turning to the dark side, I look over and this guy is passed out. He is snoring. I thought, you've been awake for 2 hours and 15 minutes and you couldn't stay through the most pivotal point of the movie, you know. And for those of you that are saying, spoiler alert, Katie, well, you've had 10 minutes or 10 years to see the film. I mean, you should have seen it by now, but I thought that was humorous. So that was my takeaway from that movie. We're going to go to a clip right now. The new stars of The Force Awakens, which is the movie coming out here in just a few hours. They were recently on Jimmy Kimmel Live and talked about how they found out how they got their roles. And here is Adam Driver and John Boyega.
Maybe just go around and talk about how the moment you found out that you were going to be in the movie and the security surrounding
I was
that.
Like 19.
How about you, Daisy?
You were also like
19.
Yeah. I was at the theatre and I hadn't been able to watch the first half because I was like desperately trying to get in touch with JJ because I didn't know how to call the US. I had to Google it, all sorts of things.
You were at a play. Oh.
Yeah.
I see.
And so he told me, and obviously I was not there for the whole first half and then had to go back into the second half and not tell the guy I was with.
Oh, because it was a secret,
yeah.
And you didn't trust him.
And it was Oedipus Rex, so it was long.
Uh-huh. Does he now know you were keeping that from him during the play?
No.
No, he does not.
No. Well,
maybe he now does,
yes.
Adam, how about you? Were you shooting Girls at the time when...
Yeah, it was the last day of the second season of Girls, and I got a call. Do you want to meet JJ and talk about Star Wars? And yeah, I would. then it was just months of meeting and making, weighing it and, taking... the time considering it, and then jumping on board, yeah.
And you couldn't tell anybody for how long?
I feel like I still haven't told anybody. I didn't tell my wife anything, and actually...
Tell John, because he's right there, and he should know what's going on.
JJ spoiled it for my... Like, he just assumed that I told her everything, but I didn't tell her.
Oh, really?
I really get into
it. It's my fault.
Now you know you can trust Adam. And John, how about you? When you found this out, when was it?
I was in a basement somewhere waiting for 7 months to try and hear whether I've got the part or not. And JJ released me from absolute...
He had you in captivity?
I was literally just waiting at home to see if JJ would give me the part. And he sent me an email telling me to come to Mayfair and meet him. And I met him and Larry Kasdan. And then he broke the news to me that I got the part. It was a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
who was the first person you told this news?
I told my agent, Femi.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to say, if J.J. Abrams calls and says, hey, we want to talk to you about Star Wars, you better drop everything you're doing and run over to see him. It will be really interesting to see what people have to say about the plot of the film and how well it does. And we'll have a little report for it tomorrow on the Steve Gruber Show. And also this new generation coming up with Star Wars, you have just a little bit of time to cram in those original films so you get all of the backstory on this plot and can go into the movie ready to see Star Wars Force Awakens, which opens tonight. It's 8:51. I'm Katie Hyde from the Michigan Talk Network, and this hour is brought to you by Mesa, good health, good business, and great schools. You are listening to the Steve Gruber Show.